Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Right, it's time for the Friday gathering. This week I'm joined in the studio by Anne Rabbitt from Fianna Fáil, who's Shannon's spokesperson on social protection. Duncan Smith, TD, is Labour spokesperson on foreign affairs, trade and defence. Mary Wiegan is here, Irish Independence political editor. Christina Finn is political editor of the journal.ie. And you're also welcome. Thank you for coming in. So we're coming up to the budget, believe it or not, next week. And, you know, it has been sold to us as being that the government is really going to hold back on spending. And I mean, we got the message very clearly that this is going to be a stingy one when it comes to tax cuts and spending. Won't be any help with energy bills. There won't be any one-off payments. Everything will be very much targeted. But given what's happened with health insurance, with energy costs, do you think that's the right strategy?
I think, Claire, to be honest with you, there has to be permanent sustainable measures put in. I don't think once targeted, once off has done the trick, to be quite honest with you. And that's why I think there is a recalibration happening. And the recalibration is the focusing on poverty. It's the focusing on the children. It's focusing on disabilities. But it's focusing on permanent sustainable solutions.
Mm-hmm. But do you think people are better off this year than they were last year?
Oh, no.
But you see what the government is saying to you. You're on your own. You're on your own. You got plenty last year where there was an election, of course. And this year, off you go now and deal with it.
But we have seen where we have done the hot school meals. We've seen where we have done the school transport. We have seen where we have given direct targeted supports and how that has actually made a difference. And the same thing has to happen with the families. And whether it's the younger families or the older generation that finds themselves in that poverty from fuel poverty, or whether it is the cost of living from the cost of just food, we need to support mm-hmm. those families.
Okay, and Duncan, your party proposed a €16 a week increase to core weekly social welfare rates. The Irish Times reported during the week that the Minister for Social Protection is pushing for 12, and even that is meeting pushback from Jack Chambers. That's what we understand from reports. So it could be less than 12.
It could be, and it better not be, because people are really struggling out there. I actually was glad to hear Anne use the word poverty. I haven't heard that from anyone in government, because that's what happening out there. People, working people, are in real poverty. You've had numerous segments on your show regarding the cost of living crisis, the bite it's having across a whole swathe of areas. We're going to talk about some, I'm sure, later on. And people need supports. And I think the last few years, we've more or less known this close to a budget what's in a budget. You know, it's been well flagged or well leaked. The concern is we don't know what's coming up. So this time next week, when I'm at my advice clinic, I'm probably going to be sitting across from people who will have lost their one-off measures that have helped them get through the last few winters. Now, what was wrong with the last few winters was that I, on this side of the table as a TD, was getting the same measures, which was totally unfair. And what we've been calling for is to make sure that these measures are targeted.
But is that not what the government is telling us, that they are going to be targeted?
Well, we're not having any detail. That's what I'm saying. This close to a budget, we would usually know. People would be comforted. We are sitting here today, first storm of the season. Heatings are going on in houses all over the country this weekend and will remain on till spring. And people just don't know and they're concerned. And there's no faith that this government are truly going to tackle poverty where it's at with this budget. We're hearing it's going to be a hold steady. We might do something on the hospitality side. It's all about the VAT rate, which is a nonsense when you have 5,000 children in homelessness and we need a war on poverty. Uh-huh.
Mary, what do you think is going to happen? I mean, the government have held that line, you know, from the early in the summer that there won't be any one-off payments. But we've seen what's happened with food inflation, energy costs over the last couple of weeks. Do you think they'll reverse course on it?
No, I don't. I think from what we've heard so far, this budget is probably going to land pretty badly amongst the public. A lot of people don't know the budget is happening. I mean, there's been little talk, no talk of it hardly, but they'll certainly know next Tuesday when the ministers stand up and deliver it and the opposition give their reaction. Because I think one of the main things, apart from the lack of a cost of living package, is that there's going to be no income tax changes whatsoever. So people will see little change to their income tax and are no change to their income tax. And in the past couple of budgets, that was a big sort of cost of living help that was outside of the cost of living package, but it was something that eased the burden for, you know, middle Ireland families. Also on childcare, we're kind of hearing that there may not be something on childcare that might live up to the promise of the election, you know, where all the parties spoke about childcare and reducing childcare.
Yeah, moving to the 200 euro a week.
I don't think we're going to see too much movement to that 200 euro a week. There'll probably be more.
Wasn't it interesting that Simon Harris mentioned the increase in provision of places, that there might be a choice to be made there?
That seems to be where the focus will be, on creating more childcare places, which obviously is a big issue because people can't get their small babies into creches, and that's preventing women from returning to work and all that. So that is an issue. But at the same time, there were big promises in the election to reduce childcare over the course of this government to 200 euro a month. Fine Gael in particular promised that within the first, I think it was first 6 months of the new government, that they would publish a plan to get to that. So we don't have that plan. We don't have any indication of where, when the 200 euro will happen, and no income tax changes and no overall cost of living package. So from a sort of, you know, broad brushstroke glance at this budget, I think next Tuesday the government will find themselves under criticism. And then against Sinn Féin has a really simple message. I was at their alternative budget launch yesterday, which is basically stop the rip-off. And that's a really simple message to, you know, get across to households.
You see, if you think about last year, right, people got double child benefit. You got your energy credits as well. That was a whole heap of money, Christina, going into people's bank accounts.
Yeah, and there was big promises. Like, I think everyone can remember the 1,000 euro, you're going to be better off in your back pocket. That was hammered home by every minister that you're going to be better off. That message just is not here this time round. They've been tempering expectations since early spring, talking about global instability, about being cautious with the budget. But I think from next Tuesday, I think a lot of voters who, you know, voted in the last election will feel a little hoodwinked, I think, about the promises that were made during the election. Like Mary said, the childcare, was promised by everybody, in fairness, 200 euro. And then when the programme for government comes out, you know, we see the fine print of it's over
the lifetime
of this government. So are you not going to see that 200 benefit until 4 or 5 years' time? And last week, actually, Simon Harris and Micheál Martin were in New York for UN Week, and they were questioned quite a bit on the childcare issue. And again, they said it seems to be down to they have a choice between increasing places or doing those cuts. And both of them were very much seemed to be on the side of getting places ramped up, saying that there's little point in having cheaper childcare if people couldn't get into the childcare
facilities. Surely you can do both.
And it was interesting, if you don't mind me just picking up on a point from Mary, when Sinn Féin launched their alternative budget yesterday, prior to the election the last time, they said there was going to be over 340 million for capital investment, and that has been cut back to over just 120. So they've cut it by two thirds. We have to invest in both sides of it, to be quite honest with you.
In childcare,
we need to do the capital to create the spaces, because there is quite a number of children right around the country. It's not just a Dublin issue or an urban issue, it's urban and rural issue when it comes to childcare. So we need to create capacity.
But that's not what the party leaders are saying. They're saying that there's a choice here.
But in order to deliver on childcare, you have to have the places to put them into. And that is investing. Like back in 2005, 2006, there was the community childcare scheme was brought in, and numerous childcare facilities, community-based, were opened right across the country. And in my own town of Portumna, we got 1.5 million for the opening of a childcare facility, which was community-based. I think we have
so
to go
cheaper
back to
than, because, I mean, you know, people are paying 1,800 euro
yes.
a month. Cases. It's crazy stuff.
But what needs to be from the targeted point of view with childcare, there is a lot of children that from inner city that are not accessing, not getting the opportunity. Sometimes going to childcare is the safest place a child can be. And that sounds absolutely shocking, but it is the truth. So we need to have very targeted interventions, as opposed to just waiting for TUSLA to give the permission for a child.
Mary, did you want to come back in there?
Yeah, just another thing to watch out for, I think, when the dust settles on this budget, is where it leaves relations within the government. You know, things have been ticking along nicely since the general election, internally in the parties between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. But from what I'm hearing about these negotiations is that they're pretty difficult, and Jack Chambers, as Minister for Public Expenditure in particular, is holding a tough line. He's not, you know, turning easily under pressure from his ministers. Any sort of negotiations that might take place in the media, as has always traditionally happened in budgets when ministers would kind of put their wish list out there, that's not been sort of taken kindly this time around.
But who's putting him under pressure?
Well, I mean, the ministers who are looking for money for their line departments, yeah, for example.
But I wonder who, like, who's having the biggest row with Jack Chambers?
Well,
social protection?
Mightn't describe it as a row, but social protection and Dairc Cleary have certainly been looking for a €12 increase in core welfare rates. And he has been pushing for that. And the sense is at this point, even though it's not been decided, is that there is, you know, there is pushback against that €12 increase in core welfare rates. Health will also be looking for an increase, as they always do in their budget. And, you know, Jack Chambers is very firmly holding the line in those talks.
But I think Minister Chambers has always been clear for the last number of months that we need to put it into key infrastructure like the grid, like into the water, like into ensuring that we can make housing that priority. And I haven't spoken to Jack this week or anything else like that, but his messaging for the last number of months has been about key infrastructure.
It's a hard sell, though, when your butter's a fiver to hear, well, you'll
have
a metro now in 15 years.
And I think if we land on a 10 or 11 euro increase rather than a 12, which is what's sort of being mooted, I think the conversation for people will be looking at that VAT cut and the amount of money that has eaten up or gobbled up.
Yeah, so that would be 870 million if it includes everything.
Yeah, but if they push it out till next year, which seems to be up for discussion, I think it'll cost maybe 330 million. So it would cost a lot less than
the full year cost.
But if people are looking at, I'm no better off with tax cuts, haven't got any increases in social welfare to the degree that I did last year, and, you know, we're seeing such a large amount of money being siphled off to one sector.
To hospitality. What do you think about that, Duncan?
No, we're not in favour of the cut to hospitality. I mean, it was done twice before, during the crash and then during COVID. There are very specific reasons for doing it in those times. We're not in that space now. So this is a bowing to pressure. And this is going to disproportionately benefit the big chains. It's going to disproportionately benefit your McDonald's, your Starbucks.
Right, there's that argument. And then we hear on this programme, this is about not hollowing out small towns and villages, that if this isn't done, you're going to have the cafe closing down. Do you accept that at all? And the impact it would have on jobs?
Like in our alternative budget, and we've done a lot of work in terms of other supports, in terms of utility supports, rates-based supports, insurance-based supports. These are the huge costs.
Yeah.
The 9% VAT rate is not going, reducing it to 9% is not going to keep a failing business open. It is not. It just is not going to keep a failing business open. Because, and it won't actually lead to cheaper products for the consumers who are facing their cost of living.
I think that's understood, that it's not going to be passed on. I don't hear anybody saying that it's going to be passed on.
Like who's the winner here? Is it, and I don't truly believe that it's going to save a failing business. Well, it's going to increase the huge profits of already large retail chains. It is.
There's a balance to be struck.
There
absolutely.
Is. But this won't do it. I'm sorry, Anne. It won't do it if it's a broad cut across the place.
I'm not going to disagree with you, but I'm also going to agree with Claire. Coming from East Galway, where we have small little villages, and that coffee shop might be the only thing that is actually open in that village. When I think of Woodford, we've lost our only restaurant that was in Woodford. And the reason being is cost is what Declan would say.
Nobody can say definitively whether a 9% VAT rate would save a place like that.
But I do think in small areas, if it's based on turnover as opposed to the large chains who would have huge benefit. I think, to be fair, giving credit to the ministers, particularly Minister Chambers and Minister Dunne, I've no doubt they'll be innovative in a way that they will approach
it. Would it not make more sense, though, to do what Labour are saying? You know, to look at other interventions.
But we have done that as well, Craig. We have done that, Claire, when it has come to the cost of doing business. Last year we have done interventions on it, and it still didn't support that small coffee shop who has to have X number of staff, who it's a peak time and everything else like that. It hasn't supported them. But they But at the same time, doing it for all that service industry isn't the right way either, I do believe.
Yeah, see, coming into this September, it seemed as though this was a dead certain was going to happen, Mary. It's not so sure now, is it? The VAT cut for hospitality.
Well, I think there's been a lot of pushback from Fianna Fáil in relation to this. But perhaps that's just a negotiation tactic that they're kind of looking for something else. I don't know what that might be.
And so, inscrutable beside you.
You know, it was originally thought that it would come in from the start, from January. Then that was pushed back to July. Whether it could be pushed back a little further, like, we don't know at this stage. But people in Fianna Fáil were certainly not too happy that this was gobbling up most of the 1.5 billion that's been set aside for tax measures, leaving small change essentially for any other tax measures. And the Fiscal Advisory Council did a report during the week, and it kind of, when it was parsed, showed that workers could have received €600 a year back in their income tax.
That was stark, wasn't it?
Yeah, in place of this VAT cut. So, and sorry, that's for the whole year. So if it was, you know, for half of the year of next year, that would be €300 per worker, for the average worker. So I think what we'll hear in the day or the day after the budget is, you know, what could have been done for this money? You know, what could have been, you know, people, I'm sure, will be making comparisons to, for example, services, you know, for schools, etc., the number of SNAs, the number of teachers, income tax, all the things that could have been done for the big amount of money that's going to be taken up for this one sector.
Didn't IFAC equate it to recruiting 11,400 nurses? Mm-hmm. That's the equivalent cost. And then you had James Anderson from Deloitte Ireland, who said that restaurants are facing significant cost challenges, but the VAT rate cut is unlikely to change insolvency rates in this sector. They say, he says, that the energy bills, cost of recruiting specialist staff are the primary factors that affect business success in this sector. So it's hard to see how you would spend that amount of money on something that just might not work.
Look at Claire.
But you're not banging the table here saying it should go ahead.
I think there has to be a balance to be struck, to be quite honest with you, because I remember the last time when we got the 9% cut, it was right across the board. I believe that one part of the sector, which could be bed nights as opposed to the small coffee shops, like I would be advocating very clearly.
Exclude the hotels for the bed nights.
Well, you've said it. I think there should be due consideration to the likes of my coffee shops in rural Ireland who are struggling. So when we have tourists to come, at least they have somewhere to have that cup of coffee and to sit down. There is a whole fabric there of where we rely on tourism, but you can only have an offering of tourism if you have an offering of something else to offer along with it.
Okay, well, we move on to health insurance, because we're having a conversation about this on the programme as well. So the bills are going up by hundreds of euro, and the three main insurers have increased the cost of their plans. Is this a byproduct, Duncan, do you think, of Sláintecare? In part, at least, because less of the private work now is happening in public hospitals. And would you say that people just have to put up with that?
No, I think if Sláintecare was actually making progress, I think we would see less people feeling they have to rely on and invest in private health insurance. An awful lot of people.
But surely it is. If less private work is happening in public hospitals, that means Sláintecare is moving on.
No, like, again, I don't think the insurance companies have adequately explained again why they're hiking costs, you know. And this is, you know, we've had 2-3 weeks ago, we had the utility companies come out, the gas and electricity, say our costs are going up, bang, and they're pointing to huge profits at the end of the last few years. We have the same with the insurance companies. There's an opaqueness and a lack of detail as to why they're increasing their costs. Sláintecare is lagging way behind, and I wouldn't be conflating the lack of progress on Sláintecare with what the insurance companies are doing. Again, there's 46% of cover.
Higher diagnostic costs, you know, changes in the methodology there, more complex procedures. It's more expensive to put somebody up in a private hospital than it is to put them up in a public hospital, because the fees in the public hospitals haven't changed for years. So again, it comes back to rising costs. That's why people are having to pay more. That's what the industry would say.
And the industry, again, are still like hiking huge profits. Not one insurance company has gone under. Not one insurance company has posted a loss. Health insurance company, that is. So again, there needs to be a bit of, I think, consideration to their customer base, but also they're operating in the health space and there's a symbiotic relationship, unfortunately, to the extent it is between public and private health. The lack of capacity in the public system is pushing more people towards the private healthcare system. Mm-hmm. And it just feels like they're being people are being fleeced again
Dara Ryan brought the energy companies in. And do you think that the health insurance companies should be brought in by the Minister for Health?
Absolutely. And I'd say the same lady will have no problem in bringing them in. But the Minister really doesn't have a function when it comes to setting prices or setting the premiums on in health insurance. But at the same time, the cynic in me would say it's amazing that everybody's rising their costs a few weeks out from a budget, be it if it's energy, if it's health. But I do think that what Stephen Donnelly has created in the last 5 years with our outpatients departments, with our surgical hubs and with the elective hospitals, and the Taoiseach was very clear this week on the floor of the Dáil with the needing to advance the delivery of the elective hospitals, creating those pathways so that people can step back from the over-reliance on private health insurance for the system that should be functioning.
But people don't, though, do
people
they?
People are really fed up, though, with hearing ministers hauling, you know, energy companies, insurance companies in.
The retailers a few years ago.
Yeah, retailers, as if there's some sort of, you know, slamming of the table and harsh words being said when they leave the room and the prices go up anyway. And I think people are really just fed up of hearing lip service being paid from government side and just watching the prices continually go up and saying, oh, look, we've looked into this and there's nothing going on here, everybody's above board here, when continually, as we see, those profits are going up and people at the end of the day can't afford it or pulling away from, you know, paying a health insurance.
But people
cost.
Do continue to pay it, because we were talking about this as well during the week. 46% of people have health insurance. Yeah. During the crash, when, you know, people had far less money, health insurance take up didn't fall back. So people really feel, speak to your point, Anne, people really feel that they need it and they're not prepared to give it up. So it just puts a squeeze on the household budget.
It is in many ways a tax on fear. I mean, and you know, your decision making can change, you know, if your family grows, if you have a family, you know, in terms of getting health insurance. But I think if the health insurance were offering changes like community rating, for example, I mean, it depends, like irrespective of your health basis or your health status, you're still going to, your premiums will go up. You know, they're not doing anything to kind of, you know, match the pricing with maybe the general health of a customer in the health space. There's nothing coming on that side. It's just flat out increases every single year in line with their profits. And people, you know, they just feel stuck. They feel, I have to pay this because God forbid the worst happens and I'm going to have to end up using the service. It is unfortunate.
And we know if the worst happens in Ireland, you'll be very well looked after by the public system. But what people are paying for is diagnostics, isn't it? And access to consultants in a timely manner. That's what you're buying.
Absolutely. Because if you have an acute, you go in through ED and you might be on the trolley, but you will get into the system. It's if the knee needs replacing, if it's the hip, it's the fear of waiting. And I go back to this fear piece again. People buy into it when they have their first child and then they hold on to it, and now all of a sudden they're in their late 50s, early 60s and things are starting to creak and they're going, I can't afford to give it up because I've been in it for so long.
Or a knee.
Exactly. Yeah. And it is also based on the fact we have an ageing demographic. So actually there's a little bit of a captive market there for the growing population. And that's what they're targeting.
But does that play into budget considerations? You know, the government look at that and go, well, that's a luxury. You know, if you want to go out and buy health insurance and it's expensive.
No, government
that's
look
your...
at it a different way. And I go back to the point. So we have acutes. We're creating the new pathways, whether it's the surgical hub, whether it's the elective hospital. So actually that there is a pathway to meet the need of the growing population that they, and it speaks to Sláinte Care, is that you actually receive healthcare in the right location at the right time in a timely fashion.
But the pace of the delivery of that, it takes years to deliver an elective hospital. It takes years. Like, you know, your local A&E, my local A&E are as bad, if not worse now than they were. It all plays into this fear that the public services, unfortunately, when you get in there, it's brilliant. But at the point of access, be it through an ED or, you know, having to wait on a long outpatient list for an operation, people are just scared to do it.
But at the moment, we have opened new, during the last government, we opened new outpatients. Minister Jennifer Carroll-McNeill opened the new surgical hub here in Dublin in February. And there's other surgical hubs at this moment in time that are actually in construction. It's the electives that we need to see brought on stream an awful lot quicker.
Okay. You, Mary, think it, this is a byproduct of Sláinte Care?
Well, yeah, and I think this is exactly what Sláinte Care was supposed to change. It was a major reform of health policy that people would get care and treatment based on their medical need rather than their means. But it has made no dent in the number of people getting health insurance, and 2.5 million people in this country have private health insurance, which I think is a vote of no confidence really in, you know, the system. But it is an unforeseen consequence, I think, to the extent that we now have, I think it's 64% of new consultant contracts are public only. So that is a byproduct of Sláinte Care, which means that, you know, more consultants are doing public only contracts, and they're not doing their private work in public hospitals. So therefore, the health insurance companies do have to pay more, expensive care for the in the private hospitals. So it's sort of what Sláinte Care was meant to change, but has actually in some ways, in an unforeseen way, exacerbated.
All right, well, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much, all of you, for coming in. Christina Finn, Mary Regan, Anne Rabbit and Duncan Smith.